Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary show, where ordinary heroes tell extraordinary stories during unique and never been heard before conversations with your host, Hillary Arno Burns. Hillary's unique listening and way of asking questions results in conversations that aren't usually talked about, so you can create the life that you really want but are afraid you can't really have. We are demonstrating the greatness in the human spirit and creating a world where we all reclaim our birthright of joy, happiness, purpose, and passion. Now, here's your host, Hillary Arno Burns. Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary show. And today we have a real treat. We have the author of The Magical Place We Call School. This book transformed how I see education. And without further ado, I'm going to introduce elementary school principal, Dr. Kathleen Corley, who has been called a Pied Piper of education. She is an award-winning educator and authority on school culture and the charismatic principal at Red Cedar Elementary School in Bluffton, South Carolina. She is also called the Pied Piper of Education, and you will find out why in a few minutes. Welcome, Dr. Kathleen Corley.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
So let me show her book again. This book, if you're in education, if you know anyone who has gotten an education, or you're just interested in education, please get this book. It can literally transform education as we know it. Dr. Corley is just, she's magical. So, I know. I guess not all schools are like yours. And how would you describe the culture at your school, Dr. Corley?
The culture at our school is fantastic. There are these surveys that we do every year, and we have great scores on the surveys. It has to do with teacher satisfaction. Do they believe the leadership in the building has their best interest in mind? The only thing we don't come out so well on is work-life balance. And the people who do these surveys said that we are an anomaly because we have scores that are all in the 90s on everything else that's building specific, like not about salary, because we have nothing to do with that. I wish we could, but we don't. That's a district-wide thing. So that number's a little bit lower, even though we're better paid than we've been in a long time. But that work-life balance thing doesn't come out so well. So the anomaly that we are is whenever they see work-life balance as a lower scoring item, they see the others as lower scoring items, like satisfaction and appreciation and contributing and things like that. And ours is it doesn't make sense because basically what they're saying is we're working really hard and our life is out of balance and we wouldn't be anywhere else, which is kind of cool. And yeah, I'm not out there with a whip or anything. I'm not saying, hey, you people haven't stayed late enough and you haven't put in enough time on Sunday evenings. Sunday evenings are, it's like negative Monday because they worked so hard, especially then. But that's not something that I tell them they need to do. We're just like-minded people who put in a lot of time and effort to make sure that our students get exactly what we want them to get.
And what do you want them to get?
We want them to be prepared to do anything in the world when they're finished with their formal education. You never finish being educated, but when we send them on to even sixth grade, we want them to feel well-equipped, as emotionally stable, confident individuals who believe they can conquer the world, who ask questions and provide answers and are inquisitive and try to be the best versions of themselves that's possible. That's what we try to do, and we try to instill that in our students, be just a little bit better than you were yesterday in any possible regard you can focus on.
Wow. So do you, I know some people, I have a friend who's a teacher and she will say, well, she has some difficult children. And it's almost like, you know, the child is dismissed as evil or bad or something. And I mean, it's heartbreaking, but what, I know you don't do that in your school. You look beyond the behavior and you, can you tell us about, I know you have a million stories in the book, but can you just say, like, you don't just slough off a kid. You actually look into it and see, even if you, go ahead. You tell the story.
You have to figure out what the behavior means. Behavior is communication. If you think about it, even as adults, let's see, you're walking past some sort of exchange in the grocery store where you don't approve of something that someone is doing to someone else. It's not a major thing. It's just like, I don't know, somebody grabbing the last whatever off the shelf in front of the person who was slowly getting ready to grab it. And your behavior might well be the hairy eyeball, the look. It might be going to the manager to say, is there any more of this? Because this lady got cheated out of the last one because this clown over here grabbed it. Or you might say to the clown who just grabbed it, I believe that that woman over there was just ready to grab that. But we have all kinds of words. Baby's behavior, they cry mostly. When they need something, they cry because they don't have the words. We try to give children the words rather than having to act something out. Sometimes there is no replacement for the acting out. Sometimes it's, I am just furious because of what just happened in my car while I was on my way to school. My mom cursed me out. And now I'm supposed to go in and be happy about learning double digit multiplication, and I'm not thrilled with double digit multiplication in the first place. And then my mom spoiled my morning, and I'm supposed to come in and probably not say anything about it. So just today, there was a child who walked in the door and he was crying, and he was met by our school resource officer, and he said, hey, why are you crying? And the boy told him why, and it's a very serious thing that he told them. And it was reportable to Department of Social Services. And I think that the reason he did it today was because there are other children in the family and they're not here today. And he was. And I have a suspicion that he wanted to say it before, but he didn't because the other children are older than he is. You see where I'm going with that? Mm-hmm. So there are times when children are expected to keep secrets. There are times when they just can't. There are times when they kind of explode and just say what's on their mind. Yeah, well, you didn't just, and then fill in the blank, whatever the trauma is. So behavior is communication. And if we can figure out what the child is trying to communicate, then we're on to something. And it may mean, I call it throwing people at the problem. There are different people who have different relationships with students, and they're more likely to tell that person something. So we try to, if there's a circumstance like that, and we believe that the relationship with last year's teacher was really good, we ask last year's teacher to make herself available and just sort of check in on the child. And 9 times out of 10, they'll tell her something that will lead to us understanding the behavior. And don't get me wrong, it's not all de-assessable.
Right.
Sometimes it's as simple as, we were having waffles this morning and waffles are my favorite. And then my mother ran out. And so I had cereal because she hates me. No, she doesn't hate you. She just ran out of waffles. It could be anything, but if it's your last straw, like, really, really? You know how when you're doing something around the house and something breaks and you try to fix it and you can't fix it, and then something else breaks and you're trying to put it back together. And then when the third thing happens, you're like, the house is sabotaged. It's I cannot breathe right today. I'm just going to forget the whole thing. It's frustrating, and children have it worse because they have our rules on top of it. Our meaning adult society's rules about, yes, you are going to go to the Boys and Girls Club today, even though you really just want a hug from mom. Hmm.
So in the case of like the DSM, I mean, I think a lot of times kids are trying to keep secrets, and so they don't want to like rat someone out, or if it was DSS, you know, get their parents in trouble or their whoever it was in trouble.
Right.
I mean, I know you have created a really safe environment that they feel comfortable speaking. Mm-hmm. But what, I mean, let's say, you know, I don't know. How would you create that if you didn't have it? Like, how does someone feel comfortable enough to say it, even though maybe their parents are going to get in trouble or something, you know?
You go back as far as you need to go back in the conversation that never happened. If I'm talking about adults, I make this joke about, okay, can we agree on you shouldn't kill people? Does our Venn diagram intersect on you shouldn't kill people? Do we need to start there? And you say, yeah, okay, I agree with that, because we're at odds about whatever.
Yeah.
Okay, if we've got that, we can go on to tougher things. So you may have to say to the child, I don't know where you've been before, but here at this school, there's an adult every 100 feet or so. And we all want you to be the best you can be. And you don't seem very happy right now. So I was wondering if you had anything to tell anybody. I'm not asking you to tell me something you don't want to say. And it doesn't have to be me. Who's your favorite person around here? And then they'll say whoever it is, or they'll say a couple of people, or they'll even talk about a friend, especially fourth and fifth graders. Have you told anybody this thing that's bothering you? Once we get to that conclusion, have you told anybody about this thing that bothers you? No. Well, you see, you kind of need to do that. If you're being hurt or somebody else is being hurt, you absolutely positively have to tell somebody that. And if it's one of us here, we have to tell some authorities about it. You understand that? And they'll say, yep, yeah, I understand. So who's your favorite person to talk to? And sometimes they talk about an older brother. Sometimes they talk about an uncle or a whatever. Well, how can you get in touch with that person? Can you tell your parents that you want to talk to them? Because the problem solving part of this, you have to walk kids through it, because this problem is down in front of me and I can't go anywhere. I'm paralyzed. I don't know what to do. So if you can sort of talk around the problem, like, well, you could do this, or you could do this, or you could do this. But really, John, it's important that you communicate this to somebody. And then I say, I have this cousin, Sharon, and she used, when she was angry, she used to write these long letters, and it's not to anybody in particular, sometimes to herself. And then she'd read the letter and she'd rip it up in tiny pieces and throw it away. And then she was all better. I don't know how that worked, but it sure did for her. You have to get it out. And it seems like more than 50% of the time, they'll tell me what the thing is if we've spent enough time doing that. And I'm not pumping them for the thing, because how should I say it? I have no authority, first of all, to try to get something out of a child that he doesn't want to talk about. And I remind him of the, is somebody being hurt? Once they start telling me about it, is somebody being hurt? No, but I think maybe they're going to be, because there's something that happened and my dad's mad about it. And he thinks my brother did it and he didn't. It was a kid in the neighborhood, but we weren't supposed to be playing with the kid in the neighborhood. So somebody's going to be in trouble. Okay, well, let's see how we can sort that out. You could try. But it's really important, John, that you're honest about it. Because I think the part about your dad thinking something and you're allowing him to think something that's not accurate is bugging you. Is that true? Yeah. Okay, so there are ways that we can fix that. That also works in punitive situations. Like a child has done something on the playground that he shouldn't do, and I'm pretty sure I know what happened. mostly because two adults have told me what happened, but I'm waiting to hear it from him. And he lies about it. And then I'll say something like, what if I told you two adults saw you do it? And there's a, oh, anything you want to change in your story? Yes. But before we go on to that right now, that yes, that sounded like you're in pain. My stomach hurts. Oh, your stomach hurts. You know, that's actually a good thing. That's your conscience. When your stomach hurts, it's telling you, oh, stop, mouth closed, because you're telling her something that's not true. And now I'm going to have to get upset and I will make the rest of your body upset. And like, is it like that? Yeah, it's like that. Well, if you don't want to feel that way, don't do it like that again. Sometimes it takes a little while to get to a thing. And we're all sort of counselors and social workers. I used to joke with the counselor when I'd say, I think what's happening here is da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. But you've worked with that child. You know him better. Is that what's happening? Yep, that's what's happening. Ooh, I get my junior counselor, Chevron. Yay. I figured something out like a counselor did. But we all are kind of that because we need to be receivers of information. And if a child comes in not looking right, is he sick? Is he just the kind of kid who's not really happy to be here? He's not a morning person. I have a little girl who plays in our band thing, our drum and flag. And I wanted her to play cymbals. The different sort of ducks in our school play cymbals. And she's a different duck. So I wanted her to play. And she joined in sort of in the middle of the season. And we set her up with the right size cymbals, and she came 2 days, and then she didn't come to the next rehearsal. We have on Tuesdays and Thursdays at 7:15 in the morning, very loud drums at 7:15, wakes us all up. So she didn't come on the next Tuesday, and she didn't come on the Thursday. And I saw her in the hallway. I go, what's going on? She said, well, like morning, like it's early, and I don't really do mornings really well. I said, well, you know, unfortunately, this is the only time we can have this club. She said, yeah, I know. So what do you want to do? Are you still going to come? Because I really want you to be there. I really don't know. I said, well, I have a secret about how you can make mornings better. What? Is it like a breakfast thing? Well, that could be. But the thing that I'm thinking of is go to bed earlier the night before. So I was talking to the music teacher. I'm facing the music teacher. This is on the next time we're supposed to have practice. And I'm talking about this girl. And I said, I talked to Sylvia. I mean, she thinks we have practice too early. Like school starts too early. Morning is too early for her. And she's not really happy about it. But I really hope that Sylvia is here today. And he went, and she was early for practice. And she went, like, oh, that, wow. With a smile, like, whoa, you're smiling too. Today she came in just a tad late, maybe 2-3 minutes, and she bolted. We do practice in a gym, so I can't be mad at them for running, not with the drums. They would never do that. Right. But she bolted to get her cymbals and then came out like, I'm so ready for this. And she is so a cymbal player. I mean, like, okay, you don't play much, but you play loud when you do it. Yeah. So she's all in on that.
Oh, so what would you say if, let's say you're at a school system who, you know, the teachers are overworked, la, la, la. I mean, it seems like, tell me if I'm wrong, that you're in administration, you have a bunch of, I don't know if they're teachers or administrators or whatever, that are all out to check the kids when they come mm-hmm. in, and you're a team and you're all working mm-hmm. together and it's not you against them and all that stuff.
Right.
What would you recommend if a teacher is like, you know, has a full class, someone's upset, and how do they handle that if they've got their whole class there too? That's a question.
Some of those things can and should be handled by administrators and or counselors. That doesn't mean you farm out everything, and it's not like get on the radio to say, could I please have someone come to D104 to pick up a student? And right. That's the way it would be said too. Right. That can happen on occasion. There can be a tantrum or something. And especially with little ones. And of course, we have people who can help. We have a behavior management person, we have an assistant principal, and we have me. And someone will call on the radio and ask for the first person. And if I don't hear anything, they're asking for one of the two gentlemen, and I don't hear a response, then I'll say, can I help you? Well, yes, I've got, because they're always looking for them first, but I have a situation. Could you come to, and they'll just say whatever place it is. We never talk about a student's name or right. what it is that's going on. If it's an emergency, we'll know that it's an emergency, and there's a way to communicate that. But if there are behavior things that keep cropping up, maybe it's systemic. Maybe the teacher needs more assistance in being more facile at dealing with her class. But maybe there are too many students in that class who are taking advantage, regardless of how she's treating them, regardless of how much she knows or is able to do. Generally speaking, senior teachers who have it all going on do not have behavior problems. They just don't. And the overworked part, some of that is the frustration of they're not listening to me. I can't believe I have all of this work to get through. I have all of this curriculum to get through, and they're not listening to me. So that's a thing we can fix pretty quickly. And sometimes if it's a whole grade level, we'll, with especially with the fourth and fifth graders, there's a place at the end of the hallway that we call the sunny spot because they're two sides of windows, so you're going to get a lot of sunshine coming in there. So I'll say, I think we need to meet in the sunny spot, and it may be all the girls in fourth grade because something's going on in the bathroom that shouldn't be going on in the bathroom. And if it's a super negative thing, just let your mind wander. The talk that they get is when somebody does this in the bathroom, and at least six or seven of you have seen it already at different times, and you've let us know, and we've cleaned it up and taken care of it. But if a child does this, they need our help. So it's not like you're writing somebody out. If you know this person, please talk to this person and tell this person. And obviously, I'm taught that child has to be there in all likelihood, unless somebody's sneaking up from the second floor or from the first floor to the second floor to do bad stuff in a bathroom. It's handled a different way. That is communication too, unfortunately. And it's pretty serious communication. Now, I'm not going to tell the kids what that means. It generally means that there was some sort of sexual abuse in some way. So we just say they need our help. So we need to make sure that we know who this is, and nobody's going to be in trouble. We're just going to make sure that it doesn't happen again and the person gets the help that she needs. And it's not ever, I'm knocking on my desk for wood, it's not ever failed. Because you kind of look at each face, and it's, well, there'd be about 50 girls. And I have some adult making sure they're seeing how each one of the children, each one of the girls is receiving this information. So generally speaking, we can get to the bottom of a thing. If it's just a class, and not forget the bathroom part, but whatever it is, if it's just a class, one of us will go in and say, you know, I'll bet you could have a lot more fun in here if you just settled down. What part of this are we not understanding? The teacher talks, then you talk, but not at the same time. And other people answer questions, but you don't talk at that time. Because that's usually what it is. And they just don't bother to stop. We had an entire grade level, the fourth graders this year. Whew, those were the kids who were at home in the primary grades during COVID. And there are some important things that you learn when you're in first and second grade about getting along with people and being polite that got missed because COVID happened at just the wrong time for these children. And it seemed to have hit the fourth graders the most. So the fourth grade teachers had been struggling most of the first semester with these children. They are nice kids. Nobody's going to get in a fight. they care about things, they're good students, all of that, but they want to be the center of attention. And what we were missing is, well, first of all, there were too many of them, like 12, who wanted to be the center of attention out of 100. And then usually you can isolate them by talking to the rest of the class to kind of encourage them to not be the audience. Well, they wanted to be the audience. They'd go, or go, yeah, that's good. I'm like, really, really, really. Please don't encourage him. I mean, that's kind of what it is. So all of that is a stop in the educational process. We said, something's got to be done here. This is not cool. And two parents contacted me to say that their children, who are more sensitive and don't engage in that stuff, didn't want to come to school anymore because the teachers were redirecting the students too many times. It's like, we can't get anything done. And I'm tired of hearing that child's name, because you do hear certain children's names over and again. So three of us interviewed all of the fourth grade students, and we asked them just a couple of questions, like, what do you like about school? How's it going? What could be better? What would you do to change things? And lots of them talked about behavior. One boy I remember saying, you know, I'd heard that these teachers were like a lot of fun, but we haven't really seen it that much. Like, I know why. But this is a listening experiment, not a talking experiment. So 41% of them said the teachers are too lenient with the students. How about that? They were looking for more order. So there's that stopping and addressing the child. By now, he knows what he has done. And the teachers had put in the hallway this big handwritten poster that said, we have one rule. If what you are doing is interfering with or hurting someone else in the class or yourself, you're doing something wrong and you need to stop. Well, it's pretty broad. That's a blanket. It covers a whole lot of stuff. So on that basis, we got a bunch of poker chips, don't need many, and every class, every teacher has a handful, doesn't need a handful. If the child is doing something that goes along with that, that violates that rule, he or she puts the teacher puts a poker chip down in front of the child's computer or what he's writing on or whatever, and everybody goes, because if he gets two, he gets sent to either the behavior management person or the AP or me. They have a reflection, they have the conversation, they spend recess inside, and we call their parents. Now, we're calling their parents over a stupid, dumb thing, like he was calling out or he was making fun of someone. Now, if it's a serious, serious thing, that's forget the two chips. It's going to be you go now. But then the teacher calls the office and says, I'm sending someone for somebody to talk to. Okay. Then we expect them to come with their head down. We talk. That has been in effect since January when we came back after Christmas break. And there have been, I want to say, maybe a dozen two chip kids, and not all the same ones either. He's on a roll, and they were messing around in PE, and then they were messing around again when they came back to the class for science. And like, well, sorry, dude, that's where you're going. But there's no conversation about it because there doesn't need to be conversation about it. Do not miss a beat, teachers. And they were in the habit of, see, what you were doing, it was, do not give him the satisfaction, first of all, for stopping your class. And I'm not saying they're out to, ha ha, I got her. They're not like that. They're not insidious. They're, like I said, they're good, well-meaning people, but they need a better control about teaching and learning is going on right now. This is not your stand-up routine. Hmm. But I said that their Maslow's were messed up, air, water, food, attention on me. And then attention on me, attention on me, attention on me, attention on me, attention on me.
So did it stop them after they got the two chips?
Yes. Yes, wow. Because you don't want to be a two chipper again. Because, right. I mean, we're calling your mom or we're saying, okay, you tell her what you did. Hmm. That's especially a good tactic when a child has cursed. First of all, you say, should I call your mom or call your dad? Call my dad or call my mom. Okay, I'm calling your dad. Because why not? I mean, it's you know, I wrote the chapter about leverage, right? It's leverage. I want all that I can have because we don't have all that much. So we have things on the positive side, like how teachers get kids' attention. I don't know if you've been in a classroom in the last 10 years or so, but one of the things we want teachers to do is have students take more responsibility for their own learning and for partners to work together. So I'm teaching a lesson and I get to a point in the lesson where I think they understand it, but I pose a question for them and I'll say, turn to your partner and talk about it. And I'm going to ask you what your partner said, which means it's not about you speaking. It's about hearing them. And then you speak for them. Well, what Thomas just told me here is da 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 da. And do you agree? And some teachers teach their students to say, I heard what he said, but I respectfully disagree with this part. And then they say whatever it is they say. But the hardest part is getting them back after they're talking. And you don't want to be standing up there. Okay, class, get up. So they'll do things like put something on the board at the beginning of the day, spaghetti meatballs. And the kids already know when I say spaghetti, they say meatballs and everybody turns to me. Or peanut butter, jelly, or Disney princesses. You say one and then you say the other. My current favorite is flat tire. And then you have everybody paying attention again. Because it's a camaraderie kind of thing. Mm. Now, this is not going to work in your average middle school.
Right.
Unless you have an exceptionally fine rapport with the kids and you're doing it almost like a joke. Okay, what should our two words be today? Lego blocks. Oh, yeah, that's pretty, you know, like that's very, very small kid. Lego blocks. Yes, let's do that. But the teachers have all kinds of things at their disposal, but it's hard to work it all in and get command of all of that in a very short amount of time. So it takes a while for folks to do it. But if you're getting the hint that this is all about the culture and the climate, this is how we get students to do hard things. Yeah. Because it's important to be able to do hard things. Sometimes a hard thing is just being quiet for a couple of minutes.
Yeah. All right, we're going to take our commercial break. Can you believe we're halfway through? And then we're going to come back with some more from Dr. Corley. See you in a minute.
Has social-emotional learning become just one more thing on your teachers' plates? Do teachers and students both find it boring and ineffective? Then bring Kikori to your school. Kikori transforms classrooms through experiential SEL activities that help students play, reflect, connect, and grow. Even better, students say it's more fun than recess. Schedule a no-obligation conversation at kikoriapp.com/bringkikori. K-I-K-O-R-I.
Do you ever feel like you can't say what you really want to say? Or that you're stuck or in a holding pattern in your relationships, career, personal life, or finances? Are there things you want in life that you've given up on? Are you resigned that this is as good as it's going to get? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then Hillary Burns, host of the Getting Real with Hillary Show, has the solution you need. Hillary is a published author of 3 books and has a program called the Getting Real Process. This process frees you from what is holding you back, allowing you to create a life you love. Don't believe it? It is hard to believe that it could work, isn't it? The proof is that hundreds of Hillary's clients have used the Getting Real Process and are now free to create whatever they want. in relationships, career, finances, enjoying life, or just loving themselves more. So go to realtalkwithhillary.com and order Hillary's book, Real Talk, and set up a conversation.
So thank you, as always, to our sponsor, KokoriApp.com. If you want to bring experiential social-emotional learning to your schools, teams, businesses, go to KokoriApp.com and schedule a consultation. And that is especially useful, as we were just talking about, after COVID, when some of these children kind of miss some of their lessons. And as always, if you don't feel comfortable speaking up, you can reach out to me. That's my specialty, is saying what we're afraid to say, and we will get you free. You can reach me at Hillary@gettingrealwithhillary.com. And now, back to our very special guest, Dr. Kathleen Corley. Hello again.
Hello again.
So I remember bringing this up when we talked earlier about my friend who works at a school, and the kids just seem out of control. You know, locking the teachers out, and when she goes to administration, they don't support her, and she's like kind of frightened to be in that school. Like, what, you know, what can a school system, like, is there any hope? That's what I would like to say. Is there any hope for her? Or, you know, how do you, I don't know, I'll just let you talk. I don't even know what the question is yet.
I would have a lot of questions for that school district that go something like this. What is the superintendent's relationship to the principals? Or if it's a very large district, what is the direct report person's relationship? Assistant superintendent, academic improvement officer, whatever it is. Who can the principals go to for their support? It'll sound like I'm passing the buck, but I know that I can say something to a parent that they might not like. I don't mean a mean thing. I mean just an inconvenient truth, something that they need to know, that, well, your child is the one who started that thing that you were so upset about. We got to the bottom of it, and it wasn't the child you thought. It was your child, and it started in this way. I wouldn't say it in just that way. I'd say, have you talked to your son about exactly how this started? Yes, that boy attacked my son. Okay, well, let's go to the videotape because it says something else. But when I have to say something that a parent isn't going to like, they may call my boss, or they'll try to call my boss. The superintendent doesn't take those kinds of calls because he would just be busy with that pretty much all the time. Mm-hmm. But there is a triage sort of person who takes those calls and filters them to the person to whom I report. And she will call me to say, tell me about it. Usually I've already written an email, and I call it a God and Gandhi email because everyone is on this email. Because Gandhi might get the call, God might get the call, I don't know. But Celeste will get the, Dr. Levan will get the call eventually. So I want a handful of people to know, this is what happened. This is what I said. This is what the parents said. This is what I said. That's when they hung up on me. No, she said that you hung up on her. Nope, didn't happen. And then we go through what exactly did happen. Well, I know that Dr. Levan is going to call the parent and talk to that parent and try to put the pieces back together. If the pieces cannot be put back together on the phone, then we'll have a three-way meeting. Well, I can only do what I do and support teachers in exactly the same way if I have some assurances that things are going to be okay at the district office. Mm. I've never had an issue with a superintendent, and I've worked for, I think at last count, I think it's something like 21.
Wow.
In 40 some years. That they're life expectancy, their shelf life as a superintendent, I believe, is still 2.6 years. Well, you see the problem, and they could be better than sliced bread and do everything right. And as my advisor for my doctorate used to say, then one sunny spring afternoon, they're voted out on a 5-2 vote because somebody decides they ought to. Now, it's not always spurious like that. And there are plenty of superintendents doing shady things, dumb things, not fit for the office, etc. But there are plenty of them who do exactly what they're supposed to be doing, but they are at the apex of politics and legal issues and land acquisition and finance and politics and politics. And oh, I said it many times. Well, that's how many times it's in there.
Yeah.
The school board positions are not supposed to be tremendously political, but sometimes they end up being that way. Mm. So, and these days, as I opened with, lots of people think they know how schools ought to be run, but they don't know much about how schools actually are run. Mm. I go just a tiny bit nuts when I see in my Facebook feed, post here if you think that the Pledge of Allegiance needs to return to the classrooms. I have never been in a school that doesn't do the Pledge of Allegiance. Where did we get, I don't know where these people are going to these schools that don't do the Pledge of Allegiance. That and cursive writing seem to be things. Mm. We do cursive writing. I've never been in a school that doesn't do cursive writing. And it's not because I come with my platform of, okay, we're going to do cursive writing and we're going to do the Pledge of Allegiance. Doggone it. If we don't do anything else in the day. Everybody with me on this, that it's not like I come there and it's already that way. Even if I'm opening new schools, which I've done three times, we don't, hey, and Pledge of Allegiance, like you down with that? Okay. Okay. It's not like it just, not it just thing. Happens.
Yeah.
No, not a thing. And we separate church and state because you have to do that. There are some folks who believe there should be prayer in school. Well, there is prayer in school. Silently, just before major tests, many children do pray, and the teachers do too. When they close their eyes, it's not that they're napping. They're like, okay, we can go on now. Yes, that's totally legit.
Mm.
But what some people are looking for is not what we can do, and we can't always make them happy.
Mm.
But back to the theme there, if the teacher has to tell the parent something they don't want to hear. Generally, the teacher comes to me and says, I think you're going to get a call from Mrs. Jones. And I'll say, okay, what will that be about? Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Okay. And did you communicate this? And did you communicate that? Yes. And yes. Okay. Did you communicate that? Oh, no, I didn't. Mm. That one we'll have to give on. We'll have to make sure that she gets that we're going to do that. Or the ones who kind of, they don't mean to ambush me, but I don't mind. They'll come in and mom and dad, they had just moved here and they hadn't been here very long. And she didn't like moving here. It was for his job. They're no longer together, but I don't think it's because of that. But anyway, she was not happy to be here. And then her son came home complaining that this fourth grade teacher was just too pushy about his getting his work done, et cetera, et cetera. Now he's a little bit of a slacker. So, and very bright and wasn't living up to the teacher's expectations. And she's very encouraging, very warm, but she's, they call it a warm demander. Somewhere in the book, there's a thing about a teacher named D. Kubik and a boy in her class who's very interesting. He has some challenges and super bright. He would say, Mrs. Kubik, the best mean teacher I've ever had. But with this other one, this fourth grade teacher, mom came in and said, there's this person is just too aggressive. This Mrs. Willis is too aggressive. There's just too much. Her expectations are just unreasonable. And my son comes home every day and he complains. about what she has to say. I'm thinking, oh, we've gotten in a pattern here that he gets more attention from this than from doing his work. So let's do this. Or she wants to do sort of a whack-a-mole and squash this problem. If she, let's see, have you ever seen the rubber band thing? Take a rubber band and go like this with it.
Yeah.
And imagine that I have a rubber band here and this is where the child is and this is where the teacher is. And she's like, come on, come on, come on. And if you keep stretching it, something bad is going to happen here. Well, either this person needs to come back down or this person needs to come up. Mm. And we'd prefer that to that because there is a soft bigotry of low expectations. Oh, honey, you can't do it. Oh, it's fuck. Can somebody get him something else? Because he's just not. No, absolutely not. If you have to scaffold it and cut out some of the problems, maybe, like there are 12 problems on a page and that's daunting, fold the page in thirds or say, just for right now, Sylvia, why don't you just do these three problems just so I get an idea where you're at with it. Please show your work so I can know what's in your head and we can fix it together. Or if you have a really great way to do it, I can share it with somebody else. See what I did there? So this lady, not happy. I want to talk to you. So when can we make an appointment? I said, how about now? And Dad is there like going from one foot to the other. I don't want any sleeps in between here because then she gets to be ramped up about five times before we get to talk. And she's also thinking perhaps that she, that I put her off and I don't want her to think that. So then she gets another thing to be angry about. So I sent a sly message to somebody to get Mrs. Willis to come. And we all met in my office and Mom went, what is she doing here? I said, well, you wanted to talk about her. Don't you think we should talk with her? Because I asked you if you had talked to her and you said you didn't. So, I mean, if I put myself in that position, I would not want to hear from the principal. Yeah, Mrs. Jones came in. Whoa, was she hot? She didn't like this and this and this and this. And sometimes it's the story that's carried home that is not exactly right. Like, Mom, I have the worst teacher. Like she has a big scar across her face. I mean, it's like that long. She is so ugly and mean. She yells, and I swear, there's a broom in the corner, and I think that's how she gets to work. I'm pretty sure of it. Especially in Salem. I used to be there.
Yeah.
So we started to have our conversation, and we were able to unpack things. And it was clear that she had other things going on, but we were the object of her ire.
Mm.
And let's fast forward. She, when the divorce happened, she moved back upstate. And Dad, I think, stayed somewhere around here. So she had the children. She was back upstate. She called to ask if her son could come with wearing his cap and gown because there were two people he wanted to see at our school to show them that he was graduating high school with honors. And one, of course, was Mrs. Willis, and the other one was me, but he wanted to see a lot of other people too. She may have just been marketing that to me. That might have been the case, but definitely Mrs. Willis, because she meant something to him.
Mm.
She believed that he could do things, and he resisted, did the rubber band thing, like, oh God, that rubber band's gonna break. I'm gonna have to move. Oh, I'm gonna have to do some things. Again, it's leverage, and it's all part of the culture that we do things here. We get stuff done, and we have a pretty good time doing it. And if moms and dads don't understand, come on in. We'll show you. But she didn't understand who Mrs. Willis was. That happens a lot, especially we loop. I don't know if you remember that from the book.
Yeah.
Kindergarten and first grade. If I'm teaching kindergarten, you're teaching first grade. Next year, you'll have my kindergartners as a group in your first grade. And you know them somewhat because you've come back and forth and done a couple of lessons and things like that. So you will know the first graders. We don't exactly loop them. But second to third and fourth to fifth, we do loop. So the second grade teacher stays in the same room with the same students, and they become third graders as if by magic. No, it's by completing a whole year of school. So the second grade teachers being also the third grade teachers, know those students very well. Mm. A teacher here some years ago who would say, as a second grade teacher, she'd say, "I know your third grade teacher. I see her every morning in the mirror, and she is going to want you to know that you must put your entire name on the line, and you need to do that first. And then you put the date right under it, not just your first name and your last name and the date." In second grade, it's different, but third grade, we're stepping up, kids. We're stepping up. Now, fourth grade to fifth grade, that one is interesting. When the kids go to fourth grade, they go upstairs. So it's a new thing. Expectations are higher. And there used to be a teacher here who was, she seemed very stern. She was fun-loving and cheerful and all of that. But first, stern. So you'd see somebody come in. You'd see a mom come in and she'd go, "What's that teacher's name? Miss Barnett. Miss Barnett, we need to see Miss Barnett. We need to see her right now." Because that kid, you know, the scar and all that, that kid, that's what the child was saying. Mm. And I'd say, because she's, mom's kind of hot. I'm like, "Is there something I can do for you?" "No, we're going to go talk to Miss Barnett." I said, "Oh, okay, but like, you're kind of here and you need to be kind of here. If I can get away with that." And she, "No, it's okay, but we just need to get some things straight." When you see them walking out, I do the same thing. "Is there anything I can do for you?" "No, I need to have a conversation with my child." "Oh, do tell." Because the child was misrepresenting something. And I'm not saying teachers are infallible or our teachers are infallible or I'm infallible. And I will be the first person to admit something when I'm wrong, when I make a mistake that is school-wide somehow. Next day on the announcements, "Ladies and gentlemen, I can't believe I did this. I mean, well, I can believe that I made a mistake, but gosh, that involves so many people. Yesterday I said that field day was going to be blah, 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 and you all know it's right there in your agenda book that it's not that day. It's the day before that. So I would have led you astray. So I'm sorry about that." And then we move on. Like, this is how you model being apologetic. Mm.
Nice.
If you mess up, fix up.
Wow. Oof, so much. And so I just want to reiterate for people that this book, if you've liked these stories, Kathleen has, I mean, Dr. Crowley had so many stories, so many different lessons of how she has, you know, gone from school to school in different leadership roles, started schools, you know, just modeled them in such a way that if we could have this everywhere, I believe the next generation would be incredible. I mean, I can't even imagine what the next generation would be like. So I just want to thank her. You can find this, we're not wrapping up just yet, but The Magical Place We Call School by Dr. Kathleen Crowley. Such an important read for our future. And, you know, in the last couple of minutes, what would you like to leave us with? What, you know, what would you like to see in 5 years? How do you want to make an impact on the world? Go ahead.
I would like to see community members, whether you have children or not, going into your local, especially elementary schools. High schools are kind of fascinating because of the technology that they have and the opportunities that they have for students that put them well on their way to their careers. If you went to high school even 15 years ago, you didn't have anything close to what many modern high schools have in the way of opportunities for students. It's not about everybody going to college, although there are certainly college tracks, but they try to get you in a place where you have decisions to make so that you're kind of Whitman sampling or having a flight before you purchase the thing you're going to purchase. So you know what's out there. Visit the schools, see what's going on there, adopt a classroom if you'd like. They always need tissues. They always need Clorox wipes or something similar to that. I didn't mean to brand name it, but like that. But one brand name, if you're getting crayons, please get Crayola, because the others are just kind of like wax that's colored and it's hard. Don't mean to be a snob about the crayons, but We're always looking for school supplies. Here, we're a uniform school, so we're always looking for uniforms for children. Nurse's office always needs underwear and socks. They do. Well, you know, because stuff happens. And so that's where it happens. Or that's right after where it happens. The classroom teachers love it if you buy them lunch, like once a year. It's the coolest thing. There's an entire grade level that really has their people buying us lunch game on point. They have different parents who, it's sort of like a room mom thing, but they kind of take care of the teachers. As far as students are concerned, we have synagogues and churches that give us things so that we can supply families with what they need. We have backpack buddies. Volunteering for any of those organizations. By the way, it's National Volunteer Appreciation Week. It's also Bus Driver Appreciation Day. And it's something else, I think. There are a bunch of them. But we have little snackies for our volunteers. We have 72 United Way volunteers who read with students. Some of the other schools in the district for any of those organizations. By the way, it's National Volunteer Appreciation Week. It's also Bus Driver Appreciation Day. And it's something else, I think. There are a bunch of them. But we have little snackies for our volunteers. We have 72 United Way volunteers who read with students. Some of the other schools in the district for any of those organizations. By the way, it's National Volunteer Appreciation Week. It's because sometimes people, not the people we're talking to here, that are just going, hey, what's going on? Sometimes it's depressing because people come with pitchforks because they want to ban books or they don't like the naming process for the new high school and they want their uncle to be it named for him or whatever. Their single issue orientation, not looking at the whole thing. So be involved.
Thank you. And that's your message. That's your message. Be involved. I love it. Well, thank you so much for the work you're doing. It's really inspirational. Again, the magical place we call school. Please get it and read it. It will change your life, your children's life, and everyone around you. So thank you again for writing it. Thank you for being here. And any last sentence in closing?
Thank you for the opportunity. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome. See you next week.
Thank you for watching this episode. I started Getting Real with Hillary when I discovered that I was a people-pleasing, pleasant phony, and wanted to be more of my real self. We can grow together. If you will like the show, subscribe to my channel, and share this episode with your friends and family so that we can have a world that's more real.